I felt my cheeks grow hot, and not from the exertion of cleaning. It was just, that is, just the one time. I don't know if... Don't even know. Nobody does, Aki. He gave me a big, toothy grin. No matter what you read in any prettified romances, nobody does. Might only be the once, might be the first of a thousand. Got terrible luck with women myself, so I ain't offering any advice. But she's not Memrodon, and you can't die like Rockless, so I'd say you're off to as good a start as any. I thought about that poor smother bastard and laughed, then coughed on some of the dust. Looking around, I lowered my voice as another Sildoon pushed a chaise out of the way nearby. How long will she be off? Scouting. Vindiro said. She's off gathering intelligence while we hunker down here. Her and a few others, riding off in different directions. Hard to say when they'll be back for certain. Until then, he pointed at a crumpled and broken chair under a hole in the roof. We clean this place up and hunker down for a bit. Let's get to it. As it happened, two of the other scouts returned 2 10-day later, reporting mixed news. They heard from more than one source that confirmed that Thumar's temporary allies, Baron Brune and the Confederate generals, had survived the battle outside Sunrak and slunk back to their homelands. They wouldn't be players in any immediate action, so that was one less thing Braelar had to contend with. The scouts also declared that they heard conflicting reports from those who had left the city of Greymoss, but more often, it sounded as if Memrodons held sway over the provinces just as they did over Sunrak, though it was impossible to tell how long they could sustain that position. Muldus thought every tower would rise up at the first chance they got, while Braelar maintained that the Sildoon were drawn to power as much as anything else. Just as they would support a strong emperor, they would throw in their lot with the Memrodons once it was apparent they weren't going to be ousted anytime soon. One unfortunate rider had the task of trying to get a message to Commander Darzak and hadn't returned from Sunrak. Rudgie and another scout hadn't returned either. Our small company was anxious and restless as we waited for more word to come in to piece together our next move. We couldn't return to Sunrak, and we couldn't appeal to the Confederates or Injurians, so until we somehow got direction from Darzak, we were adrift and listing. Muldus continued welting me, sometimes enlisting another Sildoon as a sparring partner to raise bruises in new spots, and small groups of jackals roamed the countryside away from the Vale, hunting, foraging, exploring the area. More than once, Braelar pulled Bloodsounder off his belt and approached the Vale, disappearing for long stretches each time. I caught up to him as he returned from one such outing and said, "Are you all right, Captain?" He was oddly calm, which was disturbing in itself. "When I killed those Memrodons in the Citadel, it washed all the poisonous memories clean. Even after striking Rus Jenna out, I hadn't felt so wonderfully empty, myself again. The last time I was so cleansed was the moment before making the egregious error of taking this wicked thing out of the earth." Braelar stopped himself, trailing off a little. I said, "But?" "But," he replied, fixing those mossy stone eyes on me, "then that mutinous bastard's memories began flooding into me. With no rogue witch to attend me, and no Memrodons to strike down, I began to think. But then I remembered something you said, after translating." I looked at the shimmering veil in the distance, and then back to him. "And what did I say?" "The priest of truth, the grass dog witch, she claimed visiting the Vale cleansed her. So I visited." "And?" I asked, more loudly than I intended. Braelar smiled, one of those prolonged, unnerving, rare, genuine smiles. "It is slower than killing a Memrodon, but I will never need a witch to attend me again, provided I can get to the Vale." He glanced down at Bloodsounder. "It worked, Arky. Slowly, for certain. But it worked."
"That is fantastic, Captain. I wish I had—"
We heard hoofbeats, coming fast. Rudgie and another scout rounded the bend, galloping hard for the villa. I had Loy's sword on my hip, but no crossbow. "Should we arm ourselves, Captain? Should I raise an alarm? Braelar put his hand on my shoulder. Easy there. I do not believe we are under attack. Yet. Or it would be sentries with frothy-mouthed horses. Not our sergeant of scouts. But do round up Muldus, Vinduro, and Brusnik, and meet us by the fountain. I nodded, and he gave me a shove.
Today, Arky.
I ran off and found the officers and told them to head to the fountain. Vinduro was the last one. He was taking a nap, and the pair of us joined the others by the fountain. Rudgy was sitting on the cracked ledge, still breathing heavily in between taking swigs out of a costrel. When Braelar saw Vinduro and me, he said,
Very good. Now, Sergeant, report.
Rudgy looked at the captain and nodded, sweaty, tired, shoulders slumped. But it was the look in her eye that made my hair stand up straight. One part haunted, two parts morose.
It's Greymoskep, the plaguing city. It's dead now.
That did nothing to settle my nerves. Braelar said,
What do you mean, Rudgy? How is it dead?
She took a deep breath, steadied herself.
I was heading north, just like you said, keeping close to the Vale, just like you told me, planning on heading further west once I got closer to Erstbright. But 6 days out, I...
Then she pointed at the scout, who appeared no less shaken.
That is, we saw the deserters, an army of deserters.
Even Muldus seemed taken aback by that.
Through the Vale?
No, she replied. They crossed over. Wielders, staff-slingers, clubbers, those legless bastards on their backs, supply wagons pulled by rooters. There were a lot of them already forming up on this side when we saw them. And Junty and I, we hung back, really far back, and watched the rest come through.
There was awe in her voice as she said,
Thousands of them, Cap, between 10 and 15, so far as I can tell, filled up a whole valley. Once they assembled, they headed west, and we shadowed them.
I looked at Rudgy. Well, the deserters must not be overly concerned about the edict anymore. She didn't reply, but Vinduro asked,
What's that? What edict?
I replied, Rudgy and I asked Nastenzia if the deserters could cross the Vale. We were worried about her following us. She told us she wasn't sure if they could or not, but there was some edict or other that prevented them from even trying. Clearly they can. The other scout, Junty, turned to Braelar.
They move fast, Cap, even without horses, and don't need rest like we do. It was hard to keep up, but we did.
Muldu said,
Let me plaguing guess. Grand bitch mother Vrelinka was with them.
Rudgy nodded.
Saw plenty of wielders with her, but aye up. The matriarch was there all right, trailing dead flowers behind, flying her colors. This was her force.
And? Braelar asked, hand drifting down to Bloodsounder. She headed to Greymoss?
She did, Rudgy replied, before taking another drink. They surrounded the city. Folks inside must have thought the gods themselves were back. Maybe even that they were the chosen ones. They sent an envoy out. To parley, I imagine. But the deserters, well,
Braelar said.
They didn't come to this side after all this time to parley, did they?
No, Rudgy said. They sure plaguing didn't. Smote that poor bastard, then the wielder set to work.
Vinduro asked.
What does that mean, set to work?
Rudgy capped the costrel with shaky fingers.
They built a dome around the city, just like Rokstiniak. We thought they were just trapping folks inside, like a prison, Junty said.
Rudgy shook her head.
Only that wasn't what they intended at all. We were fixing to ride back here, just about to kick up some dust, when I noticed something. The Vale Dome they built, it was getting tighter, smaller, contracting like...
Contracting? Braelar said, fist closing around Bloodsounder's haft. Rudgy looked at him and nodded once, quickly.
Aye, contracting. We sat and watched, God's help us we did. But there was nothing we could do.
We thought, Junty said, hoped maybe, that they were just threatening Greymoss and making them surrender.
Braylar said, voice cold. But they didn't want surrender, did they?
No, Reggie replied. They didn't plaguing want surrender. That dome just kept getting smaller, closing in on the people inside, past the outer walls. Kept on going. Contracting.
Junty was staring at his feet, hands in his lap like a small child.
Even up on our hill, we heard that city screaming when the people in it realized what was happening. Never heard anything like it,
Reggie said.
Those wielders just kept tightening that dome down. Took 2.5 days. The wielders with their arms outstretched, never moving. The veil just getting closer to everyone inside, herding the people further in. Until there was nowhere else for them to run, and nobody left to scream.
Her voice broke.
Sorry, Cap. It's just... they wiped them all out, every last one. The whole plaguing city. We sat on the hill and watched it happen to make sure we were reporting true.
Vindero said,
Plague me. Greymoss must have had, what, 60,000 people?
More, Muldoon said, looking north. Plaguing more.
No one said anything else for several moments until I blurted.
That's what Nastenzia said, in the framed tower in the citadel.
When she said what exactly?
Braylar asked, voice a rasp.
That we were doomed, I said, right after she realized Sofjin had freed the Myrmidons.
A strong and united Sildoon Empire was probably the only thing keeping Vrilinka from crossing over. But now, with it broken, the possibility that Myrmidons could lose control completely, that the Empire could fall into civil war with no powerful emperor to hold it together.
Braylar held his hand up. That is quite enough. We deal with the here and now, and the very real problem before us. And how are we dealing with it, Cap?
Muldoon asked.
The captain turned to Reggie.
You did good work, the both of you. I assume you stayed long enough to ascertain where the deserters marched off to next?
Reggie nodded. Aye, Cap. Once the dome disappeared, they got moving again. The giant bastards are heading south. Towards Sunrak.
He addressed Junty.
Dismissed, soldier. Get yourself some rest. We leave on the morrow.
Junty saluted and led his horse away. When he was out of earshot, Muldoon asked again.
Leaving, huh? What are we doing, Cap? What do you got planned?
We return, Braylar said. Muldoon rolled his lower jaw around.
Return? What do you mean, plaguing return? Sunrak? Your sister will have us hanging or husked before we get even 10 yards into the city.
Braylar released the haft and plucked up one of the horned deserter heads, examining it in his palm as he turned it over.
We will not enter Sunrak, not yet. But we have to alert the Myrmidons, apprise them, prepare them. We know what is heading their way. You want to help the plaguing Myrmidons, after what they've done? Are you plaguing serious?
Braylar stared at the ugly eyeless visage in his hands.
Haki is right. The only chance we have of stopping the deserters is being united, being an empire. We have to help them. If the Myrmidons aren't prepared, the entire empire could fall, our tower included. You do recall we have thousands of our brothers in Sunrak, do you not?
Of course I plaguing recall,
Muldoon said, slurring the edges of a few words again.
But there's got to be a better way. Get word to Darzak, and...
And what? Hope he can convince the Myrmidons of this danger, despite him being in lockdown and having no way of knowing what befell Greymoss?
Muldoon slapped his thighs and stood up.
They're plaguing witches. They have to know already. Greymoss had some mems inside. Sure enough, someone sent message to your bitch sister and her ilk already.
If they hadn't been under siege by deserters and wielders, you would be right, of course. But are you willing to risk all of Sunrak,
perhaps the entire empire, on the presumption that the wielders couldn't have intercepted any such messages and destroyed them, or that the veil didn't prevent them from being sent in the first place? I am not, Lieutenant. I am not.
Ruggie said, We saw them do it to a biggish city, wipe out every living soul inside. But Sunrak is nearly 10 times the size. We don't know they can manage that, Cap. And not from so far away. They'd have to be out of Trebuchet range to manage it.
And again, I ask, are you prepared to be responsible for the loss of 200,000 lives and the fate of an empire if we gamble incorrectly? Because again, I say, I am not.
Braelar dropped the deserter head with a loud clink.
We will set up a meet with Sofjian and a few of the other key Memordons outside the city. We will convince them the walls of Sunrak provide no safe haven, as the deserter siege isn't concerned with gates or trenches or trebuchets. The Sildoon and Memordons must meet the enemy in the field and destroy them, or be destroyed in turn.
Muldus shook his head.
She'll never go for a meeting, Cap. She'll assume it's a trap and stay clear, or she'll set a trap of her own and take us in. She won't meet us in good faith. Never plaguing happen. She won't do it.
She will, Braelar said. I will compose the message myself, make the urgency crystal clear, and set the terms of the engagement.
She just betrayed the whole plaguing empire. You think a little note is going to keep her honest?
The captain took 3 slow strides over to Muldus, who got up off the fountain and stood up to meet him.
Braelar said, You overstep, Lieutenant. Perhaps I confused things by inviting input right after Sunrak, but I am not doing so now. This is not a discussion. We are meeting my sister and impressing upon them the immense danger heading for them so that the Empire can stand united against it. That is all.
Muldus seemed to be biting back a number of rebuttals and further objections, as his pale face had gone crimson and his teeth were clenched. But whether he suddenly remembered Asmorgon, or simply realized the captain was not about to be swayed by any more arguments, he nodded once.
Aye, Cap. Meeting the plaguing witches. Saving the plaguing empire from giants and bigger witches. Got it.
Vindero said. Where, Cap? Where are we meeting her?
Braelar spun around and said.
The abandoned mine outside Sunrak. We are all too familiar with it. We will arrive there first, have sentries in position to alert us if it appears the Memordons have any foul intentions.
He looked at me.
Aki, bring me your pen and ink. I am no great supporter of the epistolary arts, but I have a very pressing missive to write just now. Attend me.
The captain said,
The rest of you, prepare yourselves and say goodbye to this charming villa. We leave at dawn.
Chapter 48 We rode as hard as we could to the abandoned mine without blowing the horses. Part of this was likely due to the Sildoon affinity and affection for the animals, but undoubtedly it was utilitarian as well. A crossbow cavalry member, without his or her horse, just wasn't going to be as useful. The first day, scouts reported a fairly sizable force camped ahead, suspected to be eagles, though they certainly weren't flying any colors. So we added some time to ride well clear of them, and that only seemed to incense the captain to spur us on more. Other than that, we didn't encounter anyone else besides some civilian travelers on the road heading in the opposite direction. But they moved aside and kept their heads down as we rode past. When we were 2 days out, Braelar gave his letter to a jackal and sent him galloping towards Sunrak. Muldus shook his head, looked over his shoulder to be sure the rest of the troops were out of earshot, and said,
Cap, I know you're set on this. I still think it's a fool plan. But you're the captain, and so there it is. But as much as you like to lead from the front, and you know I plaguing respect the hells out of that, you really ought to stay clear on this one. Me and Ven, we can handle the meat. If your bitch sister has any other nasty surprises, it'll spring on us, not you. And if not,
We can deliver any news after. Stay clear, Cap.
Braelar patted Scorn's neck as he said, If I am not there, Soph will assume it is us setting the trap. That will never do.
Maybe you come down out of the hills if I give a signal, Muldoo said. Thumar liked to lead from the front too, and look where that plaguing got him. That's all I'm saying.
Braelar sat straight in the saddle again, rolled his shoulders back. As much as I trust you in most things, Lieutenant, being my proxy in this matter simply isn't one of them. If this plays out as planned, there will be several Myrmidons in attendance, and, accurate or not, when they are called bitches, witches, and cunts, it does tend to make them far less amenable. Muldoo started to say something else, and Braelar continued as he rattled Bloodsounder's chains.
And what's more, I am the only one protected from them. I have to be there, and there is an end to it, Lieutenant.
Muldoo spit into the brittle grass.
Aye, figured you'd say as much. Just had to try. You wouldn't be you if you hadn't. Let's ride.
And so we did, making excellent of exhausting time. The camp was in the same condition we left it, the same rusted tools strewn around the same gaping hole in the ground exactly. It wasn't full dark as the captain led our small company into the area, but the moon was already up, its ever-present ring bright and shiny, as if it had been recently polished. I tried to pretend that portended good things, but just couldn't muster the optimism. Still, I assumed the deserter army marching through the Sildoon Empire just now couldn't see it. The crown moon, the sun, the stars, probably even the clouds were all visual pleasures only humans could appreciate. No matter what wars we fought, what hatreds we harbored, what vendettas we nurtured, humanity all existed under a single sky that was ours alone. No matter how powerful they were, the deserters could not claim it. As I climbed off my horse, muscles weary, eyes heavy, and started uncinching the saddle, I tried telling myself again the shiny ringed moon was in fact a good portent, and nearly believed it that time. Perhaps we could be united under it, at least long enough to drive the invaders back. Perhaps. 2 days later, Rudgie rode back into camp and reported a small party approaching from Sunrak. Braelar addressed his company.
Vacate the mine. Head up into the hills. 80 yards or so, yes? And stay visible. Keep your crossbows spanned and within reach, but do not present them or otherwise arm yourselves. This is not an ambush. Let me repeat that, for those prone to hearing what they want. Today is not the day we lure these Myrmidons into a trap. Whatever grievances we have with them, and we clearly have massive ones just now, we set them aside for today. And all the days to follow, until we have either dispatched the deserters or died in the attempt. But we can only do so if Sildoon and Myrmidons fight together. That is the purpose of this meeting. If any man or woman sours it with an untowards action, I will personally visit my wrath upon them. Is that understood?
The jackals all replied in the affirmative, but one freckled soldier near the front asked,
And what if the Mems betray us? Again, I mean. What if they try anything?
Braelar Twitch smiled and replied,
Then, soldier, I expect you'll be shooting your crossbows until your quivers are empty. But do not come storming down the hill. Do not engage. There will be several war Myrmidons here, and if you attempt to close, they will utterly destroy you. Is that understood?
There were more eyes, and then the captain ordered them to mount up and maintain their positions. Braelar's retinue remained behind. He looked at me and said,
Harky, I suspect I know what you will say, but I would be remiss as your patron if I didn't tell you that your presence here is not required. Muldoos could very well be right. This parley could easily end with all of us in chains or in tombs.
I made sure I wasn't slouching, as I said. As tempting as it would be to ride off, I think I will stay right here just the same, Captain. At least there are no aqueducts or catacombs.
As you will, he replied, the smile on his lips a ghost.
but at least not disappearing quickly. I saw his officers looking at me as well, with what I thought and hoped might be respect. That was at least some sort of balm for my undeniable foolishness. When Muldoose opened his mouth, though, I expected him to gut my small moment of satisfaction. Instead, he closed it again, clapped me on the back, and then moved aside to speak quietly with Vendoro. Brusnik had gone into the hills with the other jackals. The captain was running his hand down Bloodsounder, eyes closed, perhaps waiting for the tremors of memories to come that foretold violence here. That left Reggie, who was still looking at me. As usual, she didn't dawdle coming to her point.
"I'm not one to regret laying with a man, or riding him, or however it plays itself out. I make my choices, live with him too. But sometimes I feel better about it than others. This is one of those. You have more grit than any non-Sildoon I can recall meeting, Aki."
She grinned, her top lip disappearing.
"That sounds like mixed praise, I know. But I mean it in the best way. The lieutenant is right on that score."
With my limited experience, I barely knew how to handle any compliment from a woman, let alone one couched in such terms. I nodded a few times, stalling for the right words to come, when I saw a group of horsemen right up to the rim of the mine. Horsewomen, more than half of them anyway. There were 5 Myrmidons, including Sofjin, the Focus Nastenzia, and 3 Sildoon. I shaded my eyes and squinted before I realized they were now deposed Emperor Sinead, Commander Darzak, and what I assumed was another tower commander. Muldoose said,
"Plague me, but you drew them out, Cap. Kind of wishing this was an ambush right about now." "It still very much could be if we mishandle the situation," Brayla replied, watching the riders dismount and start walking their horses down the incline. "While I ordinarily admire your independent bent, I'm going to insist you don't speak unless I clear you to do so. Understood?" Maybe watching as Morgon orchestrate a mutiny had changed the lieutenant slightly, or maybe Braelar simply caught him in a rare, acquiescent mood. But rather than offer an immediate or abrasive rebuttal, Muldoo simply said,
"Aye, Cap."
Next to me, Vendoro leaned in and said,
"Something about our lives hanging in the balance always makes me real hungry. Even before my manumission, when I really got hung, my stomach was growling like a bear beforehand. You get like that?"
I shook my head. Right now I sort of want to throw up, so I'm glad my stomach is pretty empty. He watched the Myrmidons and jackals approach, put his hand on the pommel of his sword, caught himself, and removed it quickly, fiddling with his belt instead.
"Not easy, being hungry all the time."
I couldn't argue with that. The group was about 30 yards away, and I had to resist the urge to look over my shoulder and up the hill at the jackals watching as well. While Sinead had been stripped of the crown, the Myrmidons still allowed him some of his pomp, even if he had been demoted back to Tower Commander of the Leopards again. He wore a dual-colored cotardie, black on one side, gold on the other, and the plaque belt had leopard heads only now, no suns, but was no less impressive and gaudy. He still bore a scabbarded sword, which surprised me, as did the gnarled Commander Darzak, looking much more plain in his simple gray tunic. The other Sildoon, who I assumed was a commander, was the shortest in the group, and had one large malformed ear that looked like a pale vegetable, and a close-cut blonde beard. The war Myrmidons were outfitted like the ones we had met in the Frame Tower, scale and lamellar cuirasses, blousy trousers, one with a sword, another with a svelte-beaked warhammer on her belt, a third with a military fork propped on her shoulder, and Sofjin was again in her usual scale cuirass, though the bandages underneath were clearly visible on her shoulder. She had her customary rancer as well, but clearly was in no condition to wield it. Nastenzia was the only one who looked truly out of place, as she was, unarmed, balanced precariously between haughty resignation and fear, with the carved flesh on her face marking her as an outsider, even a distance. When the group stopped 10 feet away, Braelar and his officers saluted Darzak, fists twisted and hitting their chests, and he returned it briefly, saying, You lads all right then, Captain? Your sister here was tight-lipped on the particulars, Braelar said. That is not altogether shocking. As to our condition, Commander, most of our men are dead. He turned and pointed up to the hills. No doubt you marked those there. That is all that remains of our company. Sinéad wore a hard smile.
The great provocateur, Captain Braelar Kilcoyne, unwitting pawn of the Memerdon ploy to undermine everything that underpins our empire. The irony is thicker than whale oil, really. But still, I had rather hoped that the next time I saw you, your head would be on a pike or some such thing. So very disappointing, truly. I am also surprised my new lieges here have not blasted your skull apart already. I would rather enjoy that, though perhaps they recognize the part you played in abetting them.
Braelar replied. Ah, it's such a treat to see a deposed emperor in the flesh. They so often are only bones. First Thumar, and now you. I do wonder how long before these Memerdons see that you will only be a magnet for unrest so long as you yet live. They are exceedingly clever. It can't be long.
Sinéad started to respond, but one of the war Memerdons, a tall woman with her red hair pulled back into a severe bun, turned to the former emperor.
You are here as a courtesy, Sildoon, and have no authority. Do you remember that?
Sinéad looked at her, head tilted ever so slightly to the side.
That would be such a difficult thing for me to forget, Memerdon.
The commander with the crow's cropped beard nodded at Braelar coolly and said,
Captain, I do not know you except by reputation, but I know Commander Darzac here, and that is enough for me.
Many thanks, Commander Meodric.
Braelar returned the nod, and then looked at Sofjian.
So, as a matter of protocol, how should we address you? Are you a bevy of empresses, then?
Sofjian replied, How we style ourselves is not particularly important. I will only say we are not empresses. But what is entirely more important, Bray, is that you have called us here, requested this meeting, when you truly should be anywhere else in the world just now. I do recall advising you to flee, did I not?
You did indeed, Braelar said, and I was eager enough to follow such sound advice. But as you have read in my missive already, that is not possible. Not now.
Sofjian said, Yes, yes, a matter of urgency, fate of the Empire, so you said. And yet, the Memerdon of austere features and bun said, our sister here made the mistake of allowing you to leave the Citadel in the first place, so we regard her recommendation to meet you here at all to be suspect.
Braelar replied, I am quite sure you do, Letvetica, though I must admit, given that you would not even be the unnamed and multitudinous rulers of a fractured empire right now, but for Sofjian's expert manipulation of us, I am rather surprised you did not name her empress for all time, and kiss her gilded toes. And as to her allowing us to leave, he flicked Bloodsounder's haft up. I am quite sure you have been briefed. This snake is not to be charmed by the likes of you. So if anything, I allowed her to escape. Pray I do the same with you.
Letvetica began to reply, but Braelar cut her off.
But neither party is here to issue threats or ultimatums or proclamations. We are here because we possess knowledge that might very well save our empire if we work together. And you are here because your Memerdons and Greymoss have gone utterly silent. So however suspicious you are of my intentions, you would not be here, or have brought with you the commanders as I requested, unless your suspicions that I was telling the truth were greater still. So, let us try this again, somewhere north of Amenity and south of Acrimony, yes?
The other Memerdons glared at him, particularly Letvetica. Sofjian had difficulty curbing a smile. Darzac didn't bother hiding his at all, and even Sinéad had to appreciate the captain needling his captors from a position of some leverage, even if he wanted the man dead. Braelar nodded.
Very good. Now, I presume you have all read my brief manifesto on the vast danger currently marching towards you, which means you surely have questions. Ask, but do so with haste. Every moment we spend here discussing the veracity is one less we have to prepare, and there is so very much to do.
Letvetica said, How did you do it?
That is all I wish to know. Was it that cursed flail?
She looked at Bloodsounder, as if it were a real serpent that might strike her at any moment.
Sadly, no, Braelar replied. I had nothing whatsoever to do with it. While I could have slain several of your sisters in Greymoss, I had no desire to, at least no overt desire or plan. But even if I had, there is no way I could have managed such a thing unless they all took supper in a beer garden and imbibed a great deal first. Are they prone to that? I suspect not. So someone would have sent word to you if I had gone on a methodical Myrmidon assassination spree. Next question.
Darzak all but barked.
I enjoy your machinations as much as the next man, Captain, and hope you have a doozy up your sleeve to justify all this. But cut to the point, and be done with this charade.
Braelar looked at his sister as he replied,
With all due respect, Commander, there is no plot this time. No wheels within wheels. It is actually quite simple, and dire. But before these women can arrive at their own conclusions and act decisively, I require corroboration, and there are only two here who can do so.
The lightning bolt vein pierced Sofjin's brow, and she suddenly paled. Very slowly and quietly, she said, I imagined it was Bloodsounder as well. I assured my sisters you had discovered a way to use it to stop our communication. But that isn't it, is it, Bray?
Would I possessed such power, Blood Sister? But no, Braelar said. And when you eliminate that, as well as the extremely unlikelihood all your Myrmidons contracted the plague on the same day and died before sending word to Sunrak,
he looked at Nastensia.
That leaves only one real possibility, does it not?
Nastensia closed her eyes and sighed deeply. Sofjin saw the focus's reaction and whispered, Gods, they are here.
Not gods, Braelar said. That much you know all too well. But yes, the deserters are here.
Ledvedica's lips were so pursed they nearly puckered, and her brow was as wrinkled as a fallow field.
Muldus laughed, looking at Sofjin.
Oh, that's blooming rich. You didn't plaguing tell them, did you?
Commander Meodric was a man of few words, but asked,
What is it I'm missing here?
Sofjin started to reply, but Letvedica spoke over her.
On that score, you are entirely wrong, Lieutenant. Sofjin revealed everything she knew. We merely hoped that she was mad.
She looked at Braelar.
But you are claiming she spoke true. Is that it?
Braelar replied,
If we had the luxury of time and I trusted you a great deal more, I would simply let you sift through the memories of one of my men and confirm this for yourself. But she spoke truly. The deserters exist, but the Godveil is a misnomer. While they are incredibly powerful, wield memory magic far beyond your reckoning, and are giants besides, they are not gods. They bleed. They die. At great cost, but they can be defeated. But thanks to your impressive coup, they must believe the Empire is weakened enough to strike now. A large host of deserters has crossed the Veil, and they are coming for Sunrak.
The short-haired and long-faced Myrmidon with the military fork said,
Then they are incredible fools as well, even if these creatures could defeat us in the field, and I'm sure you are overestimating them doing even that much. Sunrak is the most fortified city in the world. It cannot be taken.
Braelar gave her his most withering look.
And here I thought Myrmidons considered themselves paragons of perception. Perhaps you missed the beginning of the conversation, Wenna, when I mentioned where you lost contact with all your sisters in Greymoss.
The implication was not especially subtle, but I will spell it out for anyone else obtuse enough to have missed it. The deserters not only wiped the Myrmidons out, but every inhabitant in the city as well. Without engines, sappers, poison, starvation, or any other conventional means of siegecraft. In under 3 days, they killed every man, woman, and child inside, without losing one of their own. Nay, without even knocking down so much as a cup inside. The city itself is untouched, the stones undamaged. It is the most perfectly conceived and executed siege ever carried out, I assure you.
Wenna all but spat.
Preposterous!
I assume, Braelar said, ignoring her and looking at Letvedica, that you have already dispatched riders to investigate, so you can verify this for yourself.
provided they managed not to run directly into the army of deserters now headed this way, that is.
We are not fools. Of course we did, Letvedica said.
Of everyone in attendance, only Sinead seemed unrattled by any of this.
So, at the risk of being obtuse, let me see if I apprehend correctly. You somehow crossed the veil,
he pointed at the flail, with that, I'm guessing, obliquely as it were, and on the other side, you discovered giants.
Eyeless horned giants,
Vindoro added.
Of course, Sinead said. Eyeless horned giants, that for a millennium we assumed were the gods who abdicated the realms of men. Only it turns out they are nothing deified at all.
That could be seen as a boon or disaster, depending on who you ask, only you didn't. Not surprising, but you and your men offended or angered them. That alone might not have been problematic, except for the part you played in upending the powers that be and fracturing the empire as never before. So they have finally returned, and they mean to destroy us. Is that the sum of things?
Braelar smiled, remarkably without a twitch. That is mostly on the mark, only it isn't the entire race that has crossed the veil, only a small army of giants.
Well, that is a relief, Sinead replied. Commander Meadric said,
This all sounds like the poorly drawn panels in a bestiary, and yet you all speak of this as if it is in fact, fact. Do you expect me to believe this is true?
Braelar said, True, yes. And what's more, the deserters do very much possess the means of destroying us. We've fought them on the other side, and lost 10 men to one of their warriors. But that isn't the worst of it, being a numbers and strategy game after all. You see, they have the equivalent of Memmerdons, called wielders, who can do things that would put these women to shame.
The captain looked at his sister.
I imagine you told them of the Dome Veil around the city of Roxtiniac?
She nodded slowly, color draining from her face, looking as pale as Muldus, and then Braelar stared at the other Memmerdons in turn.
You were all exceptionally familiar with how the God Veil operates, yes? Well, these Veil Domes are no different.
He looked at Darzac and Sinead.
They've fashioned the fabric of the Veil into domes around their cities, as a means of defense, only it seems they've learned a new trick.
The captain addressed the Memmerdons again.
My scouts witnessed the wielders constructing a dome around Greymoss, enveloping the city in its entirety, just as they had their own. Only this dome was not built to defend, but to annihilate. They closed it down on the city over the course of several days, shrinking it, collapsing it in on itself. The dome passed the city walls, growing tighter and tighter still. They herded every inhabitant to the center of the city, the people inside trampling themselves in vain to try to escape the Veil Dome closing in around them, until there was simply nowhere left to run. They executed more than 60,000 without a single loss on their part.
I looked at the focus and couldn't resist saying, Do you still consider your masters so very superior, Nastenzia? Before she had a chance to reply, Braelar turned back to Sofjin.
So, you see then that perhaps tearing off your leashes just after paying the deserters a visit might have been a bit ill-conceived.
While Sofjin had looked somewhat stricken by the realization of a deserter laying waste to an entire city a moment ago, her expression hardened.
Do not speak to me of timing, brother. Your kind has a manumission. 10 years a slave? Nothing. You can't possibly,
Darzac interrupted.
We don't have time for sibling rivalries and spats. What's done is done. How do we stop them? That's all that matters.
No, Letvedica said. That is not all that matters.
She looked at Nastenzia.
Why now? I don't mean Vrilinka attacking. I saw it on your face. You agree with the captain's assessment, and there is no denying that we are in a precarious position.
Wenna started to interject, but Letvedica pressed on.
But if what he claims is true, and the wielders can envelop and destroy a city with memory magic, why Wallace in behind the God Veil in the first place? Why didn't they simply destroy us all when they realized we posed a threat? why wait until now to unleash it?
The Focus looked tired, and suddenly as old as her years.
The God Veil draws memories to it. My masters have ever used it to scry on you. But even if that told them nothing, they are tuned to the channeling of memory magic on this side, and the fetters that contained it. Between those, they felt or saw your Myrmidons free themselves.
And as to why now? The answer is simple. Discovery. Much as you yourselves only recently learned how to untangle a millennium's worth of invisible chains. My masters have skills far beyond yours, but as has been established, they are not gods. They discover things, just as you did.
Vrilinka has long sought a means of manipulating the energies in this way, though I had no idea what she intended to do. I assumed she intended to use such an ability against rival city-states on the other side of the veil.
She tucked some hair behind her ear nonchalantly and said,
"Clearly, she has mastered it now, and found an unexpected use for the tactic."
Wenna wasn't convinced.
"Even if this is all truth, who is to say they could possibly envelop Sunrak with such a veil dome? The city is 10 times the size of Greymoss, and the trebuchets on the walls would prevent any giants from getting close. Do you really think they are capable of such a feat, creating a dome that massive, or from such a distance?"
Sofjin replied, "Yes, it is ridiculous. It's not as if these deserters created a wall of memory magic that encircled and ensorcelled the entire world. Clearly they lack the ability 1,000 years later to engineer something on a much smaller scale. How absurd."
Darzak said, "Which brings us circling back to my question. How do we plaguing stop them then?"
Braelar replied, "That is precisely why I summoned the bevy here and asked them to include you, Meadric and Sinead, as commanders of 3 of the most influential towers."
He looked at Sinead. "And before you disparage the jackals on size alone, recall that Commander Darzak is still one of the most respected commanders in Sunrak."
Then he turned to Letvedica again.
"You see, while you have control just now, it isn't exactly the kind that inspires loyalty. While some towers have openly thrown in their lot with you, many have no desire but to see you fail and slaughtered in the streets."
"He does have a point on that score," Sinead said, smiling.
"So," Braelar continued, "in order for our stand against the deserters to succeed, you will need the major towers to stand as one. And that will only happen if you have respected commanders such as these 3 to sway and lead."
A Myrmidon with wide-set eyes and a broad nose, who looked as if she might have been hit by a shovel, spoke up.
"He is a known liar, and this is simply a ploy to empower the towers against us, to set us up for nothing but slaughter or slavery again."
Braelar regarded her coolly. "It is true. I do have a gift for deception. And I speak the truth only when it directly serves my purpose, as it does here. You will ascertain for yourselves in short order, again assuming your investigators survive. But we need to begin preparations. The threat is very much a reality. The deserters are here. They are capable of killing off entire cities, large cities, even without bloodying their giant hands. And whatever Vrilinka's larger agenda, she certainly feels the need to wipe out the Sildoon. If we do nothing, the Empire is doomed. We have fought them. We know their strengths and weaknesses, and we can help marshal the forces to drive them back. That, and that alone, is why I am here. But we must start immediately."
The flat-faced Myrmidon started to reply, but Letvedica held up a hand, and she shut her mouth.
"Captain, for what it is worth, I do believe you are correct about the threat. What I fail to understand, though, is why you are even here. You fled Sunrak. Officially and formally, you are no longer even of the Empire. Why return and risk your lives on our behalf? What is it you hope to gain? And before you spout off some creaky platitudes about loyalty to Tower and Commander, need I remind you, you abandoned your Tower in the night, scurrying away like rats."
Muldus looked ready to finally disobey the order about minding his tongue, but it was Braelar's turn to hold up a hand before replying.
"Given your disparate natures and festering hatred of your former Sildoon overlords, I am sure this will be difficult for you to comprehend, Myrmidon. but to a Sildoon soldier, the only thing that does truly matter is one's tower. Creaky or not, it is reality, not platitude. And after we inadvertently helped my sister break the binds of the frame. He paused, and then looked at Sofjian. Lest I forget, I must give credit where it is due. That bit of manipulation and theater was deftly done. I never suspected you were capable of such treachery. Then he turned back to Latvetica. After that, we saw that Jackal Tower was under your control, along with the rest, and we did leave Sunrak. We didn't know what we could do to undermine you, but it was clear it would not happen with us caged or executed. That is why we scurried, as you say. And as to what we want, she interrupted, I do hope you aren't going to suggest we relinquish or revert anything. Of course not, Braelar said. I am not in a position to make suggestions. I am, however, in a position to make demands. Latvetica was not amused. Oh? Sofjian knows as much about these deserters as you do, and this Nastenzia knows a great deal more. We need only their counsel to adequately prepare a defense, now that you have truly warned us. The way I see it, you don't even have enough leverage to suggest. You are neglecting some significant facts, Braelar replied. He raised his index finger and then pointed up behind him without looking. Fact one. My soldiers have orders to shoot you to pieces on my signal or if you make any aggressive move. Fact two. He patted Bloodsounder with two fingers. Even if you take out everyone else in this small company and manage to strike out at the crossbows on the ridge as well, I am immune to your witchery and can take out several of you on my own. I would start with Sofjian and Nastenzia. Which brings us to the rather large fact three. He held up three fingers and spun them in a slow circle. If we kill each other here, well, there you go, but the Empire is doomed. No one wants that. And if we do kill you all here, that won't free the Empire. You are obviously a multi-headed snake, but it would still leave the remaining commanders and Myrmidons clueless about the immediate danger threatening them. And we would have to begin this whole exercise again with new Myrmidon envoys, and less chance of winning them over, given your corpses off to the side. And since we are short on time, that simply won't do. I would much rather we negotiate here and now. Wouldn't you? By the way, the signal to shoot you is me holding up four fingers. Sofjian's lips were curved in the faintest beginning of a smile, and Latvetica was as silent and still as an effigy. But the other three Myrmidons couldn't talk over each other fast enough, explosive objections coming so furiously that it was impossible to parse them out. Finally, Latvetica raised her hand and silenced them. While she might not have been an empress, she clearly had their respect, if not their deference. In typical Sildunian fashion, you overreach. But let us hear these demands, Braelar said. There are only two. First, your amnesty of all my men. Assuming we all survive, you will not hunt, impede, attack, or attempt to capture any of them, whether they stay or go. Latvetica replied, Considering that you were instrumental in ousting Sinead here, that is not an outlandish request. And the other? After we help you fend off the deserters, you allow any tower that no longer wishes to be part of the Empire to secede.
Secede, she said, with a harsh laugh. Now that is a rather exorbitant request.
Demand, Braelar corrected. But it's not so exorbitant as it first sounds. The Sildoon are practical by nature, utilitarian. They recognize strength, power, and rally to it. Surely several towers will pledge themselves fully to your banners, not out of fear or extortion, as is the prevailing condition now in the aftermath of your coup, but because they understand that their own future and success is more fully guaranteed if they align with the strongest faction, which is unquestionably you. And for those towers that don't, you would be better off jettisoning them, as they would only conspire at all times to undermine or betray you. I speak from experience.
Uwena said, Towers have never been allowed to break off. Never.
And Myrmidons have never ruled the Empire, Braelar countered. But today is a new day.
Latvetica looked at Darzac and Sinead. And does Captain Kilcoyne claim to speak for you?
Commander Darzac answered first. This is the first I've heard of it, but it's a sound idea, and I say that not knowing if the jackals would stay or go.
Sinead was toying with the leopard heads on his plaque belt as he considered the question.
I would never allow this man to be my proxy in any matter, but on this particular point, I find myself agreeing with Darzac.
He flashed a big smile.
Though I might keep the leopards inside Sunrak to re-seize power, should you provide the slightest opportunity, I do think that sometimes culling the herd serves to strengthen it.
Latvetica said, The Memerdon Assembly allowed us to treat with you here, and empowered us to weigh your information and act accordingly, but not to make promises of this magnitude.
Braelar was undeterred. Memerdons do not have to be in the same room to convene. Certainly one among you can communicate with your sisters in Sunrak. I expect they are waiting to hear from you, in fact, even now. But I would urge you not to deliberate long.
The Memerdons rejoined the Sildoon, and Latvetica said, The Assembly does not object in principle. She was calm, and her delivery was unhurried, but Braelar either saw some tell or guessed, as he said.
Your investigators sent word, then. They've seen the multitude of unbloodied corpses in Greymaw's.
Latvetica's voice had a new edge to it.
They have, and report the same occurring at Erstbright. The city was untouched, and the populace was decimated by memory magic.
She maintained her composure as she said,
So, you claim to be able to help us defeat these horned bastards. Explain yourself. Quickly.
Commander Darzac said, How big is this deserter force? Around 30,000, you said? Even with the leopards and some allies taking heavy casualties recently, and limited time to recall any soldiers from the provinces, we can still field more than 200,000. That's a huge plaguing disparity.
As he watched Braelar's reaction, though, the deep lines in his face only deepened.
But something in your eyes says that won't mean what it should.
Braelar replied, I'm afraid not. One deserter warrior can take out 10 Sildoon, and the wielders are far more dangerous than the Memerdons. We will outnumber them, outflank them, and hopefully select terrain and ground of our choice to engage them. But we will not be able to muster a large enough force to negate their inherent advantages.
Vinduro said,
But they got weaknesses.
Everyone looked at him, and he blushed a little.
Well, not many, but they have them.
Such as? Latvetica said. I hadn't intended to speak, but the words were out of my mouth of their own accord.
They obviously have no eyes, so they can't perceive the world as we do, but they do see it in a way we can't, only it does have its own weaknesses.
Latvetica favored me with a look normally reserved for the arrival of unexpected rodents.
Who is this speaking, and why should we be listening?
Braelar looked irritated, though whether by my interruption or Latvetica's demeanor, it was difficult to say.
This is my company's scholar, Archimundos. He was the one who first uncovered the means of crossing the veil, and was instrumental in our escaping the deserters, based on his learned speculation and supposition.
Very well, she said. Proceed, scholar. Enlighten.
I took a deep breath and sought the words in my head this time before blurting them aloud.
How their senses work isn't really worth going into right now, but suffice it to say, the deserters do not see light or color. However, they do perceive textures, contours, the physical shape of everything in all directions at once. It is quite powerful, but also limited in some ways.
Latvetica seemed intrigued, at least marginally.
Limited how?
Rain, for instance, I said. Raindrops are nothing more than tiny objects moving at great speed. They perceive those, and it confounds their senses, effectively blinding them.
Sinead looked up at the cloudless sky. Unless your learned scholar here knows how to manipulate the weather, that deserter fact
while utterly fascinating, is less than helpful. Though I wasn't